216 calling. Blaster, blaster. You have enemy fire coming on your right. And mullet, look out, mullet's on your left side. Look out.
Righto, this is mullet. I can see, oh, blaster. Careful on your other side there, fella. Way to go there, fella.
Blaster, this is 216. Pull up! Pull up, you're about to hit a rock!
Hey, Blaster, you did hear that, did you, mate?
Huh? I'm not sure, because I'm too busy listening to little mullet.
Alright, lights, camera, action. Now, where's the mullet? Where is he? Is he coming in by chopper?
And now, live from Quinlan's Cantina in the Gold Coast of Australia, it's time again for your dose of action cinema history from the 80s, 90s, and beyond with the Lethal Mullet Podcast.
Oh, g'day, mate, how you going?
Hey folks, how you going? This is the Lethal Mullet here for episode number 179 of the podcast, coming to you live from Quinlan's Cantina in Gold Coast, Australia. Is yours truly the Lethal Mullet here to chat about Tom Cruise's latest venture, which is of course the one, the only Top Gun Maverick. Joining me all the way from Brisbane in Australia is co-pilot of course of My Saga, and what an amazing guy when it comes to movies and movie trivia, and of course all that comes with movies itself, because he's got his own cinema as well, folks, which we'll tell you about in a sec. Blair from Movie Hug and My Saga. Buddy, how are you?
Hello there. I'm doing all right. How are you, Adam? It's been a little while, and yeah, looking forward to having a bit of a natter tonight about Top Gun Maverick, and yeah, just great to be here, mate.
And it's great to catch up with you. It's been a while. Obviously, you're a regular guest on fan and podcast shows, and we've done many a show here, and vice versa. I've jumped on your own show with, of course, Adam Harris from the Harris Palace. Of course, that is My Saga, and tell the folks a little bit about that show.
Oh, well, My Saga is our weekly, usually a weekly Star Wars show where we just catch up on, you know, the week that was in the world of Star Wars. Whether it's you know, movies, the TV shows, toys, it's just a bit of a fun natter for probably go for about 45 minutes to an hour, and it's just pretty lighthearted, unscripted, and yeah, we like it that way. And it's just a bit of banter, a bit of fun, and we hope people enjoy it.
G'day, mate, how you going? Welcome to the Lethal Mullet Network, where you'll find all these amazing shows and more. Where you'll find the Lethal Mullet Podcast, a celebration of action cinema from the 80s, 90s, and beyond. You'll also find Making Treks, a Star Trek fan podcast, where I'm joined by my amazing co-host, Mark Newbold, into a deep dive of Star Trek. You'll also find Mullet and Kilt, a look at music, where I'm joined by my dear pal, Darth Elvis. And where you can also find the Mullet Guild, a look at the Dune universe. All here on, of course, lethalmulletnetwork.podbean.com or on your favourite podcatcher. You can find us there. You can also find all these shows a week later on, of course, the one, the only Fandom Podcast Network, FPN, on fpnet.podbean.com. Don't forget to also follow us on socials. There's, of course, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at the handle at the Lethal Mullet. We'll catch you out there and enjoy your action cinema. And now it's time for the news here on the Lethal Mullet Podcast.
And you're correct. My Saga is a little documentary that Adam put together about his experience with his life and sharing his love for Star Wars with his son, Jack. And, it's a great adventure for him. And the show sort of sprung out of that. And, it's going strong for 5 years. And we hope to keep going a bit more, because that damn Lucasfilm keep bringing out stuff all the time. So there's always something to talk about.
And TV shows now as well. I mean, it's really taken off, hasn't it, with this new Disney Plus?
Oh, it's just crazy, mate. I mean, I can't believe it. It's just gotten to a time where, you know, even just to have Star Wars on television, we've been, what, 2 or 3 years down the track now with different things, and it still just blows me away just thinking about it, you know. I think of all the online fun that goes on after one of these shows, and all the fours and againsts, and all the, you know, the fun little arguments that happen, some fun big arguments that happen, and I just sit back and I go, my gosh, you know, you're getting Star Wars on television, good or bad, it's Star Wars on television, and then that's just an amazing thing to think of, you know.
It is. I mean, you know, it's designed as a kid's thing, you know, as
well, George Lucas exactly. said.
And and the ships go pew pew.
That's it. And you can't get too technical about it. And yeah, like I said, we've got we got space fighters that fly like F-16s and sound in space and all that fun stuff. And you just got to take it for what it is. And I like to think, you know, because you're right, you know, it is made for children and made for the child and all of us, basically. And the 12-year-old in all of us, I always say. There's always a 12-year-old that resides. And, we've just got to nurture that and learn from it too, because, as you know, there's great lessons in the Star Wars saga for life. And I think, you know, they're really doing quite a good job of keeping that tradition going, you know. Some of the themes and stuff that we've seen in the Disney era have actually, been in keeping with Lucas's vision and ideas. And that's thanks to, you know, people like Dave Filoni and Jon Favreau, you know. They're really tuned into those ideals.
Oh, definitely. And it's cornerstone of great myth, you know. Stories, whether it be from the current trilogy that they've just done, you know, even up from Force Awakens, The Last Jedi, you know, go back to great ones like Dune and even Dune Messiah. You know, what happens to a hero when, you know, they fall from grace or when they get corrupted, you know? There's all those sorts of cornerstones, and that's been in Dabbit, you know, King Arthur and, you know, many other mythological tales. So I think they're doing a fantastic job, but at the same time, we've got Star Trek kicking it out of the gates with Star Trek Picard and now Strange New Worlds, which I absolutely love.
What a great show, eh? I couldn't wait for each episode of that one to come out. And it took me, you know, I enjoyed Discovery and the Pike in there as well. And I was just so happy that he got his own show. And obviously it's set before the original Star Trek timeline-wise. And I was just really interested to see how they did it. And I just love the look of the show. I love the production design. You know, it's like if they made original Trek now, that's what it looks like, you know.
And without jelly beans for buttons and cardboard walls and the doors still go.
Yeah, and everything's just so opened up, isn't it? You know, I just love the look of the bridge. You know, we've got that 60s aesthetic to it, but you know, still the modern as well. And, I've surprising interest in the characters. You know, the characters have all hit home to me. And I think my favourite's the Doctor. I loved his journey in this first season. And I can't wait to see where they go next. And, the viewers have seen it or not, but that last episode that, you know, was sort of a retelling of Balance of Terror from the original series, I thought that was just brilliant. You know, just a great swan song to that season. And, bring on season two.
You can't have Star Trek without the Romulans in that era.
No.
You know? And obviously it was done in good taste. You know, it was done in such a way that, you know, it didn't sort of ping onto what was done in the TOS, you know, and, you know, Pike is a different captain to Kirk.
Yeah, for sure.
That's straight out. I think you can see it right back to The Cage, or, you know, that episode where obviously it's Jeffrey Hunter, if I remember right.
Jeffrey Hunter, correct, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, it was a very inner captain, as in, you know, he kept all of his emotions tighter inside, whereas Kirk's a very different, you know, he's still just as great a leader, but let's just say he's a bit more James Bond-like,
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I mean, the Kirk from the original series, the fellow that I had playing, can't remember his name, playing Kirk in Strange New Worlds, was sort of, look a little bit too, I couldn't really see the, the green alien kissing bad guy punching Kirk that we were introduced to and know and love coming out of him. But I suppose we were in a different timeline and in that episode. So, that was okay. But I loved the parallels from the episode, the two episodes, even the dialogue, it was just the same. So I love that moment when, they first saw the Romulus for the first time and everybody looks at Spock and it's exactly the same as what happened in the original episode. They just knocked that last one out of the park. It was just a great ending to that whole first season. I've loved every episode, actually, in this, and surprising, because after Discovery, Discovery was good, and Picard, wasn't really been a big fan of Picard, but which was disappointing because, that was the one show I was really looking forward to, having Picard coming back again. But, what I love about Strange New Worlds, it's like classic Star Trek. We get an episode a week and there's a lesson in there, I think they're on a path now that they should keep going on because, I think they've strayed for a while. I think they've realised what works and what Star Trek is, in that way, Star Wars, where with The Mandalorian and stuff like that, which is really nailed that original Star Wars aesthetic and those Star Wars themes, I think fandom's in a pretty good place at the moment, actually. Mm.
It's interesting. We've got some great stuff coming, we'll lead into the news segment in a second there, folks. But quickly, just contacts so you can obviously catch the show on Fandom Podcast Network. You can also catch it on, of course, you can see down the bottom here at LethalMulletNetwork.podbean.com, and you can also find all the links at The Lethal Mullet on all social platforms. We're on TikTok now. We're also on Twitter and Insta and all that sort of stuff. So go out, check it out. If you're tech savvy, you'll find it. Blair, where can we find you out?
I'm on Instagram at Blair at Movie Hug. I have a Facebook page called Movie Hug, which is just basic discussion of movies in general, and people put their reviews up and just sharing. And I'm on Rebel Rousers Queensland, the Queensland Star Wars site. I created that.
Awesome.
And, got a finger in a few pies. And, it's all good fun.
Awesome. Fantastic. All right, folks, let's get into the news. So, first up, Denis Villeneuve has already started clapping for the first day of production on June 2, or June Part 2, as he calls it. I still think they should call it June Emperor because they know the story. Yeah. It's heading in that direction. I want to get your take on this. Casting's obviously got Elvis in this as Fade Rautha. Elvis from the recent Elvis film. And Oscar Butler's an interesting actor. He's definitely got charisma enough. He was in the Shannara series, which I liked some of. I certainly didn't like the second season. The first season, started off a little okay. John Rhys Davies. But in this one, he's playing the final Harkonnen that will take on, obviously, Chalamet's Paul Atreides, who turns in, of course, Mwadid, the Emperor. But what's interesting is Christopher Walken is playing Emperor Shaddam IV of Corino, the House of Corino in this. It's an interesting one. He's certainly got the gravitas to play this role and certainly fits the bill. The Emperor's around about 130 years old. Thanks to Spice, his actual body obviously is not, aged that badly. But what did we think of Christopher Walken in Dune? It's an interesting addition.
Well, I say that he shall be really good in the part. That's my terrible. Who's walking? I think it's inspired casting. Actually, I think he will be perfect for the role. I mean, let's say my only to the characters, but in the original '80s Dune, really. I don't remember the guy who played him in the miniseries, but the original '80s Dune was much to do. Yeah, he didn't have much to do in that one. So I'm hoping we see. A lot more character coming out of him. And if anybody's going to bring it, Christopher Walken's the guy to do it. I think he's at that age now, which it would be perfect, for the part. Mm. So, I'm just looking forward to seeing what he brings to it, mate.
The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy has many a thing to say about deep thought. And deep thought itself has many a thing to say about the guide. But who are going to give you a guide through the maelstrom and enormity of the guide itself? Hosted by two unexpected travelers, the Lethal Mullet, all the way from Quinlan's Cantina in the Milky Way, and of course Dan the Man from Birmingham. All on the other side of the water, they have hitched a ride and come to Ursa Minor. Tell you all about the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which you can find whenever you find good podcasts.
That's right, folks. Check out the brand new show, Deep Thought Life, Douglas Adams and Everything, monthly on, of course, the Lethal Mullet Network at lethalmulletnetwork.podbean.com or on the socials at The Lethal Mullet. You can also check it out on YouTube very soon on the Spacebook Network, hosted by the one and the only co-host here, Dan the Man from Birmingham, Dan Hadley. All here. And don't panic, we'll be back.
Awesome. And obviously, for those that, you know, thought it was a fairly small-scale movie and nothing much happening, well, this is the war movie. This is the training Paul Atreides into a Fremen warrior. It's going to be guerrilla tactics up against the Harkonnen. Yeah, got a little bit of a taste of it against the Sardaukar soldiers in it. And it's sort of the midpoint. But what you're also going to see in this is battle worms. Worms go into Arrakeen, into the city itself, and just wreaking havoc against the Harkonnen and, of course, the Empress. So that's going to be huge. We obviously, too, shooting in Broken Hill right now is, of course, in Silverton 2, I do believe, which is at the corner from there, and near the Mad Max 2 Museum, which I've seen. I actually follow on Facebook, which is really cool. So for those that haven't checked it out, Mad Max 2 Museum, just search it in there. You'll find it on Facebook. The family that run that have got all the great stuff, obviously, from the films. It's fantastic. Now, but they're doing Furiosa, which is the prequel to Fury Road. It is amazing. Chris Hemsworth is playing Dementis, which is one of the bad guys in this film, which, of course, the young, obviously, version of Furiosa is going to be battling against. But we also have a young Immortan Joe as well.
Oh, okay. I did not realize Immortan was in the sequel. Prequel. Of course he would be. It's a prequel.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm interested to seeing whether or not, you know, we know Furiosa's, it's the Mad Max universe. It's just going to be interesting to see what sort of hook they use when it comes time to promote the film, how they're going to do it. You know, from the win, the world of Mad Max comes Furiosa. And I think they got a little bit of a tough sell as far as the, I know George Miller can pull it off because he's just amazing. Mm-hmm. I mean, and you and I are both in agreement that, Fury Road is probably one of the greatest movies that's come out in the last 15 years. It gets better every time you watch it. And so I'm sure Furiosa is going to bring that same sort of thing. Now, as far as being a prequel is concerned, are we going to see a young Max somewhere along the line there? Or, is he going to be involved somehow? Depends where it happens in the timeline too, you know. Mm-hmm. If you look at the original Mel Gibson movies, you know, are they now in a separate universe to this Mad Max? Or it's just going to be interesting to see where he places it. Well, let's face it, you know, Fury Road was sort of like a reinvention to some degree of the character. You know, you can't really place that Max to being the Mel Max, you know. And I did like the idea and the theory that Tom Hardy's Max is actually the feral kid grown up. It was emulating him, you know, and sort of almost saw that, you know, as a possibility. But, you know, he's come out and said that that's not how it is. But, I don't know. It's just going to be an interesting film. I mean, it's not Max, whether he's in or not. It's a different character they're focusing on. But, I'm just intrigued totally.
It's going to be interesting. Like you say, it is not really a Mad Max as such. It is a prequel setting up that world. But I think part of what Fury Road was good was that world that they made, you know. Like a friend of ours, Ryan, had mentioned before, of course, Ryan, all the way from Western Australia, you know. It is The Hobbit, there and back again, pretty much.
I didn't think of that one. On your own. Yeah. Love
you,
buddy.
Interesting. You too. And Ryan, you're champion. But I'm going to tell you, folks, Blair and I, a couple of years ago, went and actually saw Mad Max on the big screen, which was an amazing thing in itself.
We did. Yeah,
We met Goose. We also met Immortan Joe and Toe Cutter himself.
Yep.
And, of course, his own son from, of course, Nathan Jones from Fury Road. I was quite impressed with Nathan, too. Like, Nathan really loves this universe and the world of Mad Max. That was a hell of an event, wasn't it?
It was great, yeah. Where was that down the Gold Coast, wasn't it? Down at
Pacific
Fair. Pacific Fair.
Pacific Fair.
Yeah, yeah. That was a great night. I mean, you know, I've seen Mad Max a million times on video, but I'd never actually seen it at the cinema on the big screen. Because when the original Mad Max came out, I was about 12, and it was R-rated. And yeah, I know we weren't allowed to see naughty movies like that when I was a young boy. And I can remember at the time, you know, the ads being on TV and it was all, you know, it's only a movie, it's only a movie. Oh, you know, and you had Toe Cutter and the car flipping around and all that sort of stuff. And yeah, and my mum used to see the ads, if you're shaking her head going, oh, terrible, awful, awful. And it wasn't until the VHS days that I saw the original Mad Max. And actually, I think it was on a mate's third generation video copy, the early days of hiring a video on the videotape. So yeah, it wasn't the best way to see it, but I mean, but through that, it gave it that extra sort of I suppose Tarantino, a grindhouse type sort of vibe to it, you know, and just absolutely loved it. And it is the original Mad Max is actually my favourite Australian movie of all time. Much as I love Fury Road and, you know, Road Warrior and all that sort of stuff, that original film, I just saw the Interceptor and that was it. It was just love at first. Really. So it's just in the DNA, you know, and I think as an Australian, you know, film lover, Mad Max is probably our Star Wars. If there's a franchise that Australia has it in that same sort of vein, it would be the Mad Max films. So there again, like I say, with the new ones that are coming out, you know, whether you see them in the same universe, the same timeline, or like a prequel trilogy or films or whatever they're going to be doing, exciting times ahead, I think.
Really is. Now, reason we're bringing up Mad Max is because it has an influence to a certain degree on Top Gun. Why? Because its co-pilot character, or in this case, the radar guy, whatever you want to call it, communications guy, is, of course, called Goose. Just like a certain member, of course, the Mad Max cast, it, of course, was Goose. That's right, Goose, the motorcycle police rider, friend of Mad Max, pretty much the co-pilot to go on all the wild chases for main force patrol. Well, this, of course, Maverick had, of course, the one and the only Goose, who unfortunately passes away due to an event in the film. But
yep.
Maverick, the new film, is all about that legacy, which we're just about to talk about now, folks. So let's get into the main one. Folks, Top Gun Maverick, a sequel long time coming, and it's one that I've always wanted to see. It's been talked about for years. It was pretty much the only sequel, apart from Mission Impossible and other things, that Tom Cruise really, really wanted to do, but he did want to do it right. We've been waiting for this for a long time, pal.
Oh, my gosh. It'll be 36 years, something like that. And I just love, you know, you've probably seen the internet memes where, you know, the young bloke comes out of the theatre in 1986 going, oh, that was great. And then he comes out with a walking stick. And, that was great, you know. That was great for Maverick. And I think that's me. It was a movie that I hoped for, but never really thought we'd ever see. Anytime it was brought up in interviews, and Tom, he'd shoot it, no pun intended, he'd shoot it down. To finally see it, and then of course, you know, they were making it. I remember back in 2019, and I think, wow, you know, is it too long? You know, like, is a couple of generations of kids that have been born since that probably don't know the original film, even though it's, you know, it's that cult classic that, you know, it's one of those movies that actually defines it, the era defined the 80s. But I just, you know, was very surprised when they actually were filming it. And then, of course, we had the pandemic and that put it back another 2 years, and which was annoying. But then you thought, well, we've waited this long, another, you know, they've got to wait until it's right, because you can't, like, you know, No Time to Die, you know, you've got to see a Bond film at the cinema. You've got to see a Top Gun movie at the cinema. It's just it's not the same going to streaming, you know, and watching it on TV. And God forbid on your phone, you know. A lot of people tend to do. It demands the biggest screen and the best sound system possible. And, yeah, I went and saw Maverick with a friend when it came out, you know, on the first weekend. And, yeah, just was just blown away. Like, Europe, you know, I felt like we were sitting in the plane. It was just so well done.
It's an amazing film. And I think in some ways it handles legacy better than a lot of sequels as their characters age. You know, for people like ourselves who, you know, in our mid-years, Tom Cruise's character Maverick really sings to us.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I like the development in it. I like that he was still, you know, the hothead. You know, he could have been a general. You know, he could have been a 4-star admiral by now or whatever. But he just loves the chase. He loves flying. You know, he loves that, and he loves living on the edge. And so you had that great thing of, you know, technology, and technology is gonna take over, but not today, you know.
Not today.
And I thought his character was really, really good. It's probably one of the best performances I've actually seen from Tom for a while. Like, the empathy that he showed, and the actual character himself. You could see that this man, you know, was a 35 years old and had 35 more years of experience under his belt, and life changes you, you know. For one of it, you know, like a Star Wars metaphor at the moment, you know, whereas, you know, everybody lost their mind when Luke Skywalker went and lived on an island for 30 years later and stuff like that. But life changes you, you know, and 30-odd years events happen. And I thought it was that was portrayed a lot better in this, you know, that you actually saw the pain, the character development, and he's the same person but a completely different person at the same time, you know. And that's what I really responded to, was just the development in Tom's character.
You know, there's been many roles that he's played which have always been interesting, you know. Obviously Ethan in Mission Impossible is probably one of his more popular ones, which is, you know, more action adventure. But I've always liked his work in War of the Worlds. I thought it was one of the most uncruised roles, you know. He's playing a father who's not trying at the start, but at the end, these events that come in really form a hero's journey that you haven't seen before. Or even Nathan Algren in, of course, The Last Samurai, you know, where we see, you know, basically somebody's completely jaded from, you know, post-traumatic stress of being, you know, a soldier in, you know, the times in the West. And obviously then from there, coming through and seeing, you know, inklings of the samurai, and, of course, where they're having their own troubles with the modern technology in the modern world coming to Japan at that time in the Meiji Restoration. So it's a very interesting time for Tom, I think, now, because he knew it was an important role to bring back Maverick. And he's done it in such a way that it's a comedic way of doing it too, because you know that the collision of his old ways plus this modern way of basically drones now coming into the U.S. Navy and being basically unmanned fighters that we can do everything that he does. But, of course, doesn't have quite the ingenious mind of a fighter pilot, which we get to see in this too. Some really interesting characters in this as well. We've got Ed Harris at the start, which kind of echoes Strickland, our mate Strickland in Top Gun.
That's it. You're a slacker. No, no, that was Back to the Future. Wasn't it?
That was Back to the Future.
You're a slacker, yeah, man. You're a slacker. Yeah, well, that's right. I mean, he had, you know, old Ed, he didn't have a very big part in the film. Yeah, that was the only scene he was in, really, wasn't it, from memory, that first part of the movie. It was good to see him. But there again, you know, it's the old grizzly old admiral, you know. I think, you know, it's just another day in the office for Maverick. He comes across one of them once every week, I think, you know. So tell him, you could have been a contender, mate. What have you done with your life, you know? It was a good start.
What I really liked in this too was the fact that Jennifer Connelly has such a big tie to the first film.
Yeah.
That she is the Admiral's daughter that gets talked about in the first one, which he was told not to muck around with. He's told, no, you cannot, date that woman. You cannot play around. But, of course, what does he do? He's still chasing her, 30 years later.
Yeah. She gets two mentions in the original film. I found out what character she was playing, a name, it, you know, hit me straight away. Oh, okay, you know, that's we're going to go back there. And yeah, she did Tom, you know, so with Jennifer, the years sort of, you know, don't really show on her face as far as, you know, she holds her age pretty well. So yeah, that was good. It was a believable sort of relationship, you know, in that way. I like that. Yeah, you know, she was like running the bar at the club, and just the interaction with all the pilots, and they'd come in and what I loved about the movie, it was such a homage to the original film, such a feeling of the 80s, but it was contemporary, you know. And that was my major problem with redoing Top Gun, because to me Top Gun was a film of that of the time, you know, of that decade, and probably one of the most important films in that decade. And how could you do a sequel to that, you know, and keep it? But yeah, I was just completely surprised with how they worked it out. Yeah, very well done.
What's great about the film too is it is a fan service film at its heart. It really is a fan service film. We get everything. We get the opening just like the original.
Oh,
you know what you're into. And that was beautiful. Good. My heart was just like... You know, like, it was amazing.
Man, I was tears running down my face at that first part, and I thought, this isn't the first minute of the film. What's going on? You know, and the amount of times you've seen that original opening from the first movie, and with the new, you know, with the new jets, you know, the Hornets, it was almost shot for shot.
It really was.
And just to hear Danger Zone again, and it was the original Danger Zone. I'm so happy that they didn't do it up or do a new remake of it or something like that. And it still works. It's still contemporary, you know. And
it's beautiful.
Yeah, mate. We're gonna go watch it again now.
I feel like I'm actually watching it myself again. What's great about the film itself, too, it's sort of, I thought it was going to be more of a training film, but it brings back ex-Top Gun graduates, Top Gun graduates that are younger than, obviously, Maverick, and he's got to coach these new people, you know, who are obviously, you know, aces themselves and don't have quite the experience that he has. And it's interesting with the Super Hornet in there and the mix of, you know, obviously, a couple of lead characters and colonels and captains who really would like to see him gone. They just want him out. He's a dinosaur as far as they're concerned. So he keeps one-upping them each time, showing that, a pilot thinks on the seat of the pants, ready to go, and knowing exactly what has to be done up there. Now, the one thing I was missing all the way through it, and I never thought we'd see it, I saw the trailer for a little second, but I thought it was like a little dream sequence, was when they do the mission and crash land, they actually get in their F-14. The Tomcat gets to be seen yet again, and, of course, Goose's son, Miles Teller, he does a stellar performance. Miles Teller's fantastic in this. If anything, Miles should be the star of all these interviews that they're doing overseas, because Miles really has shown the angst the celebratory nature of a pilot. And another thing too, that sort of father-son clashing, or even it's almost like, you know, not just a father, but sort of estranged uncle of Maverick, who's, you know, look, I brought you up, your father wasn't here, but look how you turned out anyway.
Well, that's it. I mean, we look, going back to watch the original film, it, my daughter went and saw Maverick with some friends at the drive-in, which, you know, I was against originally. I got to see it at the cinema. But anyway, they went to the drive-in to see it, and she loved it, came back raving about it, you know. And she'd never seen the first movie, so we sat down and watched it together and a couple of weeks ago. And just watching, looking at the relationship then that Maverick had with Goose, and then of course, you know, when his son, you know, was a little boy in the scenes and stuff like that, and and then you saw like that how Meg Ryan's character was forgiving of Maverick, you know, with what had happened, and she'd obviously come to terms with, you know, this is your that's the life, it's just what happens. You know, he loved flying with you, Maverick. He would have flown anyway and all that sort of stuff. So don't beat yourself up about it. However, there's this little three-year-old boy who's just lost his daddy, and Uncle Maverick's, to, you know, is his thing to blame for it. And that's quite, you know, the resentment he over the years that would have built and built and built, you know, to get into that. And then to actually become a pilot himself and then have to be trained by the man that you see that killed your father. Yeah, it's just great, classic drama.
it is 100%. You're right. Now, folks, one of the great things about this film is that it kind of, to me, opens up for more films, which apparently Miles Teller's been talking about in interviews post the release of the film, that there has been talks and that, you know, it's up to Tom at the end of the day whether they do another one.
Well, Top Gun 3, well, yeah, another 35 years. you like to think they'd be onto that pretty much straight away. It's funny because, you know, just on Rebel Rousers and stuff, we've just been discussing, you know, different things, and there's been quite a bit of sentiment going on about how that the team of Maverick should, you know, do Rogue Squadron. The upcoming Star Wars movie, that whether we'll see it or Patty Jenkins, you know, whether we'll see it or not. And it's just proven, and you would like to think that they're at this moment looking at all that and going, well, that's what the people want to see, you know, let's do everything to make that happen, and they should bring the best people on board for that, you know, because yeah, it was just great entertainment, you know, the whole from go to woe.
I think so too. And I think the great thing about it is it's not even the aerial scenes that got me. It's the character scenes of Maverick defying his, you know, not only the team of pilots that are going to join him, but his superiors. He's constantly one-upping them all the way through sheer experience and, you know, just having a go. He's got courage. You know, he knows that life is, you know, an immortal being. You are going to go one day. And he's living every day as his last, and that's in a pilot's sort of ethos, I think, in this, you know, they're using that time, but you can't get that from a drone, and that's what his whole thing is at the end of the day.
Exactly.
It's his experience. Yeah. So what is your favorite scene in the film?
The bit with the planes. let me think. I just love that scene where Miles Teller's character was just, you know, doing the push-ups and just bawling his eyes out. I broke in that and like I said before, the first minute and a half of the movie with that nostalgic feels that those images gave, and of course, you know, the all the flying sequences are just top notch. But as far as character moments are concerned, yes, that part with Miles Teller, is probably the highlight for me.
It's fantastic. Folks, for me, it is literally the start of the film where we get to see a new plane, this plane that's meant to break the sound barrier so many times. It's just an amazing scene. And we get to see Ed Harris parking up at the gates trying to get into the place.
That's right, wasn't
it? Pull the plug on the mission. And of course, Cruz brings the plane so low, blows almost the doors off the car and the bases.
The whole roof. Oof.
Fantastic scene. And, you know, I'm going to say, on the Hallenbach scale, which is what we do here, folks, at the Little Mullet, Hallenbach scale, based on Joe Hallenbach's finger scale, so out of five, and that is, of course, from the last Boy Scout, the Bruce Willis film, directed by, of course, the late Tony Scott. So this film's a 5 out of 5 for me, folks. What about you, Blake?
5 out of 5. I think mainly for the, like I said, the nostalgic reason stuff. I probably gave it a 4. Oh, sorry. Four out of five. But, however, saying that, I've only seen it once. So I need to go back and have another rewatch of it. And that's probably after tonight. I think that's probably going to be happening this weekend, if not tomorrow. We'll see how we go because I'm really keen to have a look at it again. But, it's just got everything you want in a movie. And I haven't seen a movie like that for a long time, you know. And like I said, it just surprised the heck out of me. And I hate to say it, but I actually probably like it even more than the original now.
There's a lot of people that have actually said that.
I know, that's saying something. But there again, like I said, I must watch it again. And because re-watching it the other night, the original film the other night, and I hadn't seen it for a little while, and it's great, but this Maverick just seems a lot more confident in what it is and knows what it is, you know. But however great fun the original film was, and we've got to talk about Val Kilmer.
Yeah, 100%, folks. Yeah, Val Kilmer. Yeah. Who I think that was done very tastefully, actually, the way wasn't
brilliant.
It? Yeah. I mean, not only from the texting sort of stuff that we sort of build in that scene, you can really tell Val, obviously through his operation and stuff for his trachea, he's obviously lost that through the cancer, I believe he had, an illness nonetheless. His performance is really heartwarming, but also it's tragic at the same time, and it's building in a little bit of his real life, I think, definitely.
For sure.
But also... It shows there's still an amazing actor there no matter what's going on. And, folks, I can tell you this much. He is back in the Willow TV series as Mad Mardigan. He's definitely in it. We've heard about this, and I cannot bloody wait.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, so happy there's a Willow TV series. You don't believe. That's another thing I never thought would ever happen.
Same.
It's a good time to be a fan. Like you're saying, his performance, like you said, from the moments where they were texting each other to, and you can really tell, you know, that there is genuine affection between the two actors. Mm-hmm. They respect and love each other in real life, and that was reflected in the film. And that's one thing, you know, in the original movie, they were rivals, but they didn't hate each other. You know, they were competitive, and you had that, you can be my wingman anytime. You had that great 80s ending at the end and that moment. But obviously in their story, you know, their friendship relationship carried on over the years. And I'm sure that, you know, watching Iceman go higher up the ranks like he would have done and Maverick basically being at the same level but happy with that, you know, would have been interesting for Val's character, you know, to... experience that, and just over the years, I'm just imagine what sort of conversation and discussions that would have been actually going on, you know. He just really brought it, was just really heartfelt in that moment, even though his small scene was only about 5 minutes in the actual film, was one of the highlights of the whole film.
That was fantastic, and that's what I love about it, is it brought that to there. Now, folks, before we wrap, I've got to let you know that later on this year, if all goes to plan, so fingers crossed, we will have the co-founder of this network, and hopefully, I've even suggested to Kyle to come out too. So if Kyle can, hopefully Kyle will come out to Australia. But Kevin, the Raider Nerd, Reitzel, will be out here, of course, to visit his lovely wife, Erin, And the two of them are coming up the coast of course, of Australia, southeast coast, as we call it, up to see us here in Brisbane and the Gold Coast, respectively. And we definitely will be doing something when we do that. Now, the trick is we're going to obviously catch up and go around, check some, shops at JB Hi-Fi. He certainly has to go. He loves that. And the pie shop, Yatla Pie Shop. Big shout out to those guys for an amazing pie. And whereas Kevin calls it a pasty, or is it pasty? A pasty.
Pasty.
I didn't believe it was a pasty. It was for Aaron. I mean, Kev went straight for the steak and onion pie.
Yep.
You know, as you do. Now, obviously, we need to also do a bit of a cinema trip to the Blair Home Cinema. What do you think we should watch?
Well, I think we might actually leave that one up to Kevin, seeing that he'll be the guest of honour for the weekend or the evening that we do it. I mean, plans are afoot for an Aussie barbecue, a couple of some Aussie beers, and some good fanboy conversation for a while, finishing off with a scintillating evening of cinematic entertainment on the 140-inch CinemaScope screen and the Dolby Atmos sound system. So,
awesome.
I think that it'll be a good night all around and probably be the greatest night of entertainment that Kevin Reitzel has probably ever had in his life. Hey, nice, well, it'll be with us, of course.
Oh, of course you'll have fun. I'm going to say, and your influence of an amazing cinema at home has been what I've actually done here too, thanks to your influence, is I've created, obviously, the Quinlan's Cantina Home Cinema, which has its own projector, has its own, so you can watch classic kung fu movies now in your home without having to go to the drive-in or the cinema. And, you know, we've even got an MGM account now where we're watching all the old canon films, Delta Force. All the way through the Chuck Norris ones and even Death Wish series, well, of course.
Yep.
The other Chuck, yep. Charlie Bronson. It's all there.
Oh, mate, it's fantastic. Death Wish, it's a movie I haven't seen for quite a long time. Delta Force, another one of my favorite 80s movies. So, as far as what we will watch, maybe we can see No Time to Die, because when Kevin was originally coming out back in early 2020, that was the movie we were going to see. It was we planned to probably go into Brisbane and see the movie and, you know, that sort of stuff, and then, of course, it didn't happen. So that may be on the cards. We'll see what happens.
Nice. Well, folks, big shout out to, of course, Blair for coming on the show tonight, and a big thanks for spreading a little bit of love, of course, for this amazing film, which, you know, I think you all should agree that you'll go out and check out before it finishes at the cinemas. I certainly will be. And, stay around, folks, because we've got a lot more here on, of course, the Little Mullet Network in the next couple of weeks. Just a quick idea of what's coming. We've got, I don't know if you can see that, folks, we've got Brain Smasher. Jayspeed, Terry Hatcher. That's one that I've been wanting to talk about for a while, by the director of Cyborg and, of course, many other films of Albert Pune, who also did, of course, Nemesis as well. Then we've got Equilibrium. That's right, Christian Bale before he became...
Love that movie.
Batman, that's a great movie too. Folks, we also got one that Lee Fillingsness of the Highlander show, Blood of Kings, wants to do. And so did Kevin. Stone Cold with Brian Bosworth. And, of course,
Lance
Henriksen is the bad guy. What else do we have here, folks? Oh, we've got some other ones. Now, this is one that's been wanted for a few people to talk about, and they want me to cover. And then, of course, is Bunraku, which is a very interesting film and has a Japanese action star in this one too. Josh Hartnett, Woody Harrelson, there's a lot of Aikido in this, but not like the Steven Seagal style. It's a little bit different. Kevin McKidd from Trainspotting, Ron Perlman, and Demi Moore. So, folks, stay around for those. We'll be doing those very, very soon on this very network. Blair, any upcoming stuff that you want to shout out before we close out?
Not really. I am looking forward to seeing Nope in a couple of weeks. I'm just seeing the massive... the high praise that movie's getting this week in the States and a lot of the other reviews. And I love a good love a good UFO mystery, scary thing. I think the Alien movies are still some of the most unsettling films that they bring out. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what Jordan Peele does with that genre. And what I'm hearing, it's really, really good. And I had no idea when it was coming out. And I thought, well, this would be good to see. And I get on the Event Cinemas website and find out it's not until the 11th of August. So it's going to be a fun 2 weeks of avoiding spoilers on the internet for Nope. But that's probably my next big one I'm looking forward to movie-wise. Yeah, that's probably about it for me at the moment.
Fantastic, fantastic. All right, folks, check out the links, check out all the other shows. Obviously, check out My Saga and, of course, Movie Hug and Rebel Rousers and much, much more. I'm a Lethal Mullet. We'll catch you next time.
Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. Here are the other great shows on the Fandom Podcast Network. Culture Clash, where we discuss the latest in entertainment and pop culture. Blood of Kings, our show covering the entire Highlander universe. Couch Potato Theater, we celebrate our favorite movies. And Time Warp, our fandom flashback show discussing a year in movies and our favorite retro movie, TV, and pop culture topics. Good Evening, discussing all things Alfred Hitchcock. Hair Metal Podcast, we cover the rock metal music of the 80s and early 90s. Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, discussing the time-traveling Doctor Who universe. Lethal Mullet, an action film podcast, covering the 80s, 90s, and beyond. Also, check out the Lethal Mullet Network for more great podcasts. What a Piece of Junk, our Star Wars podcast. Making Treks, a Star Trek podcast, with a deep dive into the final frontier. The Fandom Show, our Fandom Podcast Network live YouTube show discussing the hottest topics in fandom. The True Believers MCU Podcast, discussing the Marvel Cinematic and Television Universe. Union Federation, our Star Trek and the Orville show. And we're proud to welcome the BQN Network to the Fandom Podcast Network. Please visit our friends on the BQN Network, a Star Trek Universe podcast that also includes your favorite topics, movies, history, superheroes, and more. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on YouTube. The Fandom Podcast Network is also on all major podcast platforms. The Fandom Podcast Network audio master feed is on Podbean at fpnet.podbean.com. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening, and remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom.